There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 261. I mentioned a couple episodes ago, we're going to start mixing it up around here. It's not going to be fantasy baseball all the time. We're going to have some fun with it. We're going to keep it baseball related tonight and for the next few episodes with our guest here. But we're going to talk baseball movies. We got our top 15. We're going to go 15 through 11. And then eventually we'll have some more fun with it and maybe take it down some other rabbit holes just to give some brevity to the situation that we're all living in. You can find me on Twitter at BDentric, and my co-host, I will call him a co-host because we're going to do a lot of these. Find me on Twitter at Ben J. Palmer. Ben, how we doing, man?
I'm doing good. Just trying to socially distance myself from everybody I know and not touch my face.
Yeah, so I'm with you.
Doing okay.
That's my hardest part, is not touching my face. My wife is yelling at me about that all the time.
Yeah, I'm a habitual nail biter, so that's, I can't stop.
Yeah, it's tricky stuff, tricky stuff. So, like I said, we'll kind of make this work as we get going, and we'll kind of go back and forth, and we don't know how long the episodes will be, but we'll just have some fun talking baseball movies, and people liked it last time we did it. So, Ben wrote an article on PitcherList.com where he does a lot of great work. Talking about his top 15 movies. So we're going to go backwards. And I made my list this time. And I told Ben before the show, his list has some really good documentaries, some older stuff that most people maybe don't even know about. So we'll have some fun with that. I know I haven't seen many of them, so we might do special episodes on that to have some fun with it. But Ben, let's just start out with it. What is your number 15?
So my number 15 movie on the list is The Rookie, which was a nice movie. It's directed by John Lee Hancock, who other people might know from The Blind Side, and he's had a handful of other movies that kind of have a similar tone to The Rookie. But have you ever seen it?
Yes, I saw it a long time ago. It's in my top my list for tonight for sure.
Perfect. Yeah, it's solid. It's got a lot of heart to it. It's a very it does kind of follow a formula that is pretty well worn, but it is also based on a real life story. It's on the story of Jim Morris, which kind of shows that sometimes the generic formula actually does happen. And so whether it is formulaic or not, it is kind of based on this guy's real story, this older pitcher who blew out his arm and became a high school coach and then just kind of decided to try out for the major leagues because his students challenged him to, and ended up making a major league team. He didn't really do a whole lot in the majors, but it's really impressive. Dennis Quaid is very, very good in this. He does a really good job playing Jim Morris. And probably one of my favorite aspects of the movie is there's this cool dynamic. Jim Morris's father, is played by, I forget the actor's name, but he's the guy who played the bad guy in the early X-Men movies, the guy who made Wolverine, Stryker, William Stryker. Yeah, I forget the actor's name off the top of my head. But his father in the very withholding, strict military father. And there's a cool dynamic where Dennis Quaid's character is throughout the film trying to get his father's approval and at the same time trying to be there for his children and make them proud. So he's got this struggle where he's trying to impress a lot of people, make a lot of people proud of him. And he's also trying, I think, to not be the father that his father was for him, not be so strict and not be so withholding. And that's more of a subtle undertone, but it's a nice, well-written emotional conflict in the midst of all the baseball, which is fun too. It is, you know, it's a Disney movie. It's very, you know, kind of Disney movie-ish, but it's very sweet. It's very heartwarming. You know, there's a place for all different kinds of movies, and this one's just it's a nice movie. It's a sweet movie. It makes you happy, and it's fun. It's really enjoyable. It's not incredible. I think John Lee Hancock actually does a pretty decent job directing it. There's some really nice shots here, especially the movie poster has a shot that's actually in the movie, and the way he frames Morris standing on the mound with the sun right behind him, just creating this silhouette with the oil machines in the background. It's a really nice shot, but overall it's solid. I like it. It's nice.
Yeah, no, it's you said it best. It's a Disney movie. It's got it's like the arcs, the good, the bad, all, like the troubles, trials, and tribulation, and then finishes with kind of the happy ending. He, you know, gets his chance, all that good stuff.
It's an underdog movie, and definitely. You kind of, when you hear about an underdog movie, honestly, if I just tell you the basic plot of the film, you read the IMDb description, and it's like, you know, this old pitcher who blew out his arm tries to get in the MLB again on the as a challenge by his players, you're like, okay, I think I know where this is going, but it's still nice. Sometimes a predictable movie, if it's done well, it's still nice. It's still enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That was number 11 on my list. I told Ben before the podcast that my list is gonna be a little more goofy. It's more the movies I watch. I don't do a ton of the serious stuff, so I'm looking forward to checking out these documentaries and some other ones. And I like The Rookie. It's a good one to just kind of – it's a good one you can put on the background if you want and just kind of remember you've seen it before type deal. It's a good heartfelt movie, like you said. So that's number 11 for me. My number 15 is one that's probably not on everybody's list. I'm going to be very, very blunt about that, but I think it's one that it makes me laugh a lot. I don't know if it didn't get the proper due it was deserved or if it really wasn't that good of a movie, but I just thought it was kind of goofy and funny. And that's Mr. Baseball with Tom Selleck. I absolutely, I told you this can be a goofy list. I warned everybody. I really, really enjoy it because it shows like the brash, hardcore, used to be great ball player from like New York area. And it's just going all downhill and he ends up going to the Japanese league. He gets traded to the Japanese league, which is a whole other dynamic in itself right there. So he's, you know, didn't really want to be there. He shows up and he thinks he's, you know, king of the world. He's better than everybody and all these scenarios. But it's a funny story on like he has to learn there's a different way of life. Like when he goes and looks at the bathroom situation, that was hilarious. The language barrier, his interpreter is one of the funnier characters in the movie. And then once he starts to learn the culture and the way of Japanese baseball, it actually turns into a pretty good baseball movie where like he brings his team back and they become good. And it's kind of got the ups and downs storylines. It's definitely not a Disney movie. I'll be honest about that. But, I really enjoyed it 'cause it shows a little bit of, kind of humility to Mr. Baseball himself, but he basically shows that he can bring, you know, American baseball to Japan and then embrace Japanese baseball, which is a different culture in its own, and kind of intertwine it all in it. You know, you get all the bat banging going on, the whole different atmosphere in Japan. It was funny to watch him try to like embrace it all and then finally accepts it and goes from there. So I found it very entertaining. It's not on everybody's list. I get that. But it's one that I didn't mind at all.
That's funny. I've actually never seen it. It was a movie. I'm aware of it. I've heard of it. I just never got around to watching it, but it's, I mean, Tom Selleck, man, that's like, what is it? 1992. That's like,
yep.
That's right. That's like peak Tom Selleck, isn't it? I mean,
yep. It was a heyday for him. It was one of those, it was either he was just looking for a payday or he really wanted to do a baseball movie. I couldn't quite figure out what it was. It was weird.
I'm looking at the cast list. Dennis Haysbert is in this as. Yep. Is he a power hitter again? Is it like?
Yeah, he's one of his teammates, I believe, if I remember correctly. Yeah,
it's resurrecting Pedro Serrano.
Yeah, it's quite the deal. Like, it's not the kind of the romance of a rookie movie, but it's more of a just kind of
right.
It's like towards the end of his, you know, once a great player, kind of. Towards the end, and it kind of rejuvenates himself in the new culture. Now he's back to being the MVP type guy. It's kind of fun in that respect of the situation.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. It doesn't look like it's streaming anywhere, but when it is streaming somewhere, oh my God, it's got a 13% on Rotten Tomatoes. I feel like it can't be that bad.
No, I'm telling you, it's not for everybody. That's why, like, I know people are going to see it and be like, what is Bubba talking about? I totally get it, but it's, they're not all going to be this bad, I promise. But it's one of those, it's like a guilty pleasure one.
Hey,
where it's just,
you know what?
So bad. Here's
the thing. The thing is, movies, music, books, all of it, it's art. It's all subjective. If it means a lot to you, that's what's important. That's why movies are great. There are so many movies out there. And in fact, you know what's really cool is everybody can name a movie that's really terrible, but they like it because it's terrible, because it's funny, like, you know, The Room or something like that. But there aren't too many people that can find, like, it's, I think it's harder to find a movie that is generally considered bad that you just genuinely love.
Yes.
And that you can kind of acknowledge as bad. Plenty of people will hate on good movies. They'll be like, oh, that movie is so overrated. Everyone thinks The Godfather is the greatest movie ever, but you know what? I think it's trash. And but finding a movie that, like, everybody hates, and you're like, you know what? I like that movie. I really enjoy it. I'm that way about Batman Forever, the one with Jim Carrey as the Riddler. I think it gets way too much hate. It's a fun little movie. I mean, obviously, you know, Schumacher then did, you know, Batman and Robin, and that was trash. But Batman Forever, it gets a lot of hate, and I'm like, it's fun. I like it. It's a really enjoyable movie. So that's good. It's good that you like a movie like that.
Yeah, no, and it's a good point you make, and that's what's the beauty of it all, because, you know, there's probably a lot of TV shows that people like that I don't like, or vice versa, and that's the beauty of it, like you said, is it's all art, and art is different for every type of person. So it's a good way to preview this, because there's
exactly.
Probably more to come.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, that's I've gotten more engagement on this article than I think I've ever gotten on any article I've ever written. I'm fairly certain there's about 30 comments on the article, which is a lot for a picture list article. Like, we usually get, I mean, Nick's The List mid-season gets, I don't know, 20 comments. Like, and I've just gotten a lot. And a lot of it is people like, how could you dislike this movie? Or how could you not have this movie on your list? So everybody loves different movies. It's been funny to see how passionate people are about this.
And that's the one thing, is people are very passionate about things they like. That is very, very true. And if they don't realize it, not everybody is the same.
Yeah.
So interesting there.
Yep.
Let's talk about your number 14, because I've never even heard of No No, a Documentary.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. So I assume you know the story of Doc Ellis, right?
Oh, yes, definitely. Yes, a crazy druggie that was crushing it, yes.
Wild, wild story. I had heard of Doc Ellis's no-hitter that he pitched while he was tripping on LSD. And as an Orioles fan, I was very aware of the 1971 Pittsburgh Pirates because they beat the Orioles in the World Series. But I never really knew much about Doc Ellis aside from like, oh, he's the guy who pitched a pitched a no hitter on LSD, right? That's kind of weird. But this is really cool. Doc Ellis has a really cool story. The documentary itself is primarily about Doc Ellis, the person. The LSD no-hitter is definitely an interesting story within the documentary, but it's not all about his crazy no-hitter. What's cool is Doc has a really interesting story. He struggled a lot with alcoholism and drug addiction, especially while he was playing. And he turned it around and later became a drug counselor, which is really cool. And so it kind of tells his story. The movie also touches a little bit on drug use in Major League Baseball in the 70s, which is kind of wild and not something that I feel like gets talked about enough, because we always were all in this could be a whole nother podcast, but we're always happy to yell at the steroid era players for using steroids. And we're always happy to say, well, Barry Bonds shouldn't be on the Hall of Fame because he cheated. He used steroids, it enhanced his performance, and he cheated. Now, amphetamines don't have the same effect on you like steroids, but I think it's incredibly hard to argue that they're not performance-enhancing drugs in some way. And I think this film kind of makes that argument too, because there are interviews with guys, with former major leaguers, who talk about how much they used amphetamines because they needed to, and it helped their performance. And it's just kind of not talked about, despite all these big stars in the 70s just using amphetamines and drugs like crazy in Major League Baseball. So that I thought was a really interesting aspect to the documentary. And also it's a nice little look into the 1971 Pirates, which were a very groundbreaking team that I honestly did not know until watching this documentary. They were the first team to field an all black starting lineup, which is really cool.
They had Dave Parker.
I didn't know.
Was that 71 or is it later?
I could look up their roster. But yeah, it was a really cool documentary. Yeah, that was where they had Clemente, they had Willie Stargell, obviously Ellis, lots of guys. Who was it you were saying?
I was thinking Dave Parker, but that might be like a little bit different. Like, I see
Mazurowski.
Okay, a little later on, but
But it was, it was a fantastic team. So the documentary has got a few different cool aspects to it. Doc's got a great story. The 71 Pirates are a cool story. And a little bit of look into drug use in Major League Baseball in the 70s. It's pretty standard for a documentary. I've always found when you watch documentaries, when you watch a documentary, it's relatively a standard documentary. It's, you know, interviews with people, archival footage over top of the interviewees talking. And that's fine. That's generally how documentaries go. And if the subject of the documentary is interesting enough, that's perfectly fine. You will find some really cool documentaries that try a creative approach to the documentary. A great example of that is my favorite documentary of all time, One More Time with Feeling, which is a documentary on Nick Cave, who's a musician. I'm not sure if you know him. He had an album come out years ago called Skeleton Tree. And Skeleton Tree was released, was being recorded and then was released after the death of Nick Cave's son, who accidentally fell off a cliff and died. And the documentary is a really, really, the emotional process of handling the grief of losing his son and channeling it into his music. It's beautifully shot in like black and white, and they do these song performances. I love those kinds of documentaries, but a standard interview kind of documentary is still really cool, and that's what this is. It's well-paced. It's quick. It keeps you interested. It's a cool documentary. I think just baseball fans, baseball history fans, would really, really like this.
Yeah, I really want to check it out. I think that's very interesting because I've been a big proponent that the steroid era people forget about the amphetamines, the greenies. You hear stories about guys would have pots and pots of coffee before the game, and they just load their cup with greenies in it, let them dissolve in there and drink them. That's how they got going every day.
Yeah.
I say, if you want to build a steroid wing, I'm all for it. If you want to remind people of it, but put the amphetamine wing up, put the cocaine wing up. That was a big era. People forget about that.
Right. Exactly. Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's wild. So
yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's a huge thing because people, there were performance enhancing drugs forever. There was another article I did that got a lot of hatred on PitcherList, which was the PED players should be let into the Hall of Fame. And I made an argument for it, essentially saying cheating is a long history in baseball. Mm-hmm. It's not just drugs. It's not just, you know, Willie Mays handing out amphetamines to people. It's other players cheating. It's Roger Hornsby writing an entire article saying you got to cheat to win. Like, he literally wrote an article titled that and said, if I hadn't cheated, I would have had a much shorter career. You know, it's all over the place. So, but that's a topic for another day. I will say, just for anybody listening who wants to check out No No, a documentary, it's on Amazon Prime. It's on Stars. So if you have, it's also on Vudu. If you have any of those, if you got Amazon Prime, you can watch it for free. It's right there. So check it out.
I am writing that down right now to check that one out over this down period in life. I'll have to definitely check that out. My number 14 is another kind of kids movie. It's more of a fun. I get serious later, I promise. Like, right now, it's kind of the
that's okay.
Yeah, right now it's more the kids movies where I felt weird leaving them off the list, but we'll get serious probably the next couple episodes. But this one is one any child remembers it. You did the motions. Walking around, and it's a good, like you talked about The Rookie being a heartfelt Disney movie. This brings it all back. It wasn't Disney, I don't believe. Well, maybe it is actually, but Angels in the Outfield is one that I absolutely love. Like, if you're a kid and you like baseball, it's one of the coolest movies like ever. Like, you got this kid that sees the Angels, brings a team back. Like, we've all, well, maybe not everybody, but hey, you're an Orioles fan. I was a Giants fan before the last decade.
Yes,
and we watched a lot of losing baseball. So there was a lot of empty stadiums and things like that going on.
Yep.
And as a fan, as a kid, you're still a diehard fan. The kids' stories being, you know, a part of a foster home, and they get to watch games. It means the world to them. They have their favorite players. And then all of a sudden, they make a prayer, and the Angels show up in the outfield to help the Angels out. It's a really cool kind of a thing. If you're a kid, you have the imagination that you could do stuff like this. You believe in, you know, I'm not going to say higher beings, but just like, you know, Ghostbusters, you believe in ghosts. You believe in different things that can make a reality possible. So I found it very fun. It's very like lightning movie. It's for anybody that likes it. And it intertwines baseball very well. And the part I liked about it intertwining baseball is for people that love baseball, these kids love a baseball, help them, you know, find something brighter in their day. And that was always good because, you know, I've never lived in a foster home, luckily, but I know a lot of people have, and it does not seem like the best environment to be a part of. So to have this kind of outlet of baseball, which many of us use to kind of get over other issues in our lives or in day-to-day things, to watch the kids do it and then bring, you know, winning culture to top it off, I thought was a great way to make a movie, and I really, really enjoyed Angels in the Outfield.
Yeah, it's a fun movie. There was one that a lot of people were like, how is that not on your list? I saw it as a kid a few times. It's a nice movie. Like you said, it's a perfectly fine kids movie. There's some aspects to it that I'm kind of like, you know. But think about it this way. The movie is very interesting if the Angels are an allegory for steroids.
Oh, look at you. Spin zone. Spin zone.
No. That's, yeah, exactly. No, and you get to see a very young Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice movie. It's funny. Christopher Lloyd is very, very funny in it. And that was That was, I think that was the first time I ever saw Christopher Lloyd in a movie when I was a kid. I think that was the first thing I ever saw him in.
So you saw and that before Back to the Future?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, so remember, this movie came out in 94. I probably saw it when I was like 8, which would have been about 1998, 1999. So I saw that. I grew up in a family that was pretty strict about what movies I was and was not allowed to see.
Gotcha.
My first PG-13 movie I saw in theaters was the first Spider-Man, which I had to pitch to my parents. I mean, I had to pitch it. And like, I had to be like, look, here's what stylized violence means. And that the MPAA is stylized violence in this. And really what it is cartoonish violence. And come on, it's Spider-Man. Let me see it. I was 11. And I'm making this pitch. And then the first R-rated movie I ever saw in theaters was The Passion of the Christ, because of course. I come from a very religious, I grew up super relig, and my grandmother was like, I'd like to take Ben to go see The Passion of the Christ. And I was like, I think a teenager, I don't remember when that came out. And it was okay, because you know it's about Jesus, and then I'm watching it and it's so violent. It is so incredibly violent, and I'm just like, this is a Quentin Tarantino movie in Latin. Like, what are you doing letting me see this? But it's about Jesus, so it's okay to see.
It's okay.
Like a whip ripped his flesh off. It was crazy. But anyways, I digress. Angels in the Outfield is less violent than The Passion of the Christ.
Yes.
And that's where I'll leave it.
I don't want to go down a Passion of the Christ rabbit hole here, but I absolutely loved your comparison there. It's a Quentin Tarantino movie with religion. That is one of the greatest quotes I've ever heard.
That's
so good.
That's really what it is. It's so incredibly violent. It's all in Latin. 2004. It came out in 2004. So I was 13 when in 2004 it came out. And that was 3 years. I had to basically do a whole PowerPoint presentation to get my parents to let me go see Spider-Man in 2001. But 2000, Ben's like, I'm going to take Ben to see Passion of the Christ. My parents are like, cool, R-rated, see ya. Like, whatever.
Grandma knows best. We're good.
It was weird. Yeah, grandma will take me. Yeah, that's the Jesus Christ Chainsaw Massacre. But yeah, that's okay for Ben to see. Whatever.
Oh, man, that's outstanding. All right, what is your number 13 movie?
My number 13 movie is The Natural, which I think a lot of people would have higher up. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of conflicted with The Natural, because there's a lot of stuff I really, really like about it. And there's just my biggest problem is the story, the writing. It kind of got away from me. I will say, I'm going to preface this by saying spoilers for The Natural. I'm going to do spoilers. So if you... the movie's been out since 1984, but if you don't want to hear spoilers for The Natural, start hitting the 15 seconds ahead button and skip this section. But okay, spoilers. Now, The Natural. It starts off with this serial killer, I think. This woman who, have you seen The Natural?
Yes, it's my number 8.
Oh my God. Okay, this will be great. So we start off with this serial killer, I think, who we don't know anything about her. Like, we know nothing about her. She shoots Robert Redford's character. She was killing other athletes, I think. Is that what her MO was? Why did she target Robert Redford when he had never stepped into the majors at all? Why did she kill herself? Was she ever caught, or was she caught later? Nobody seems to care about the serial killer after she shoots Robert Redford. It's sort of like she's just this mechanism, like, for Robert Redford's story to happen. This just was not addressed in any way at all, which was just really weird to me. It's, I don't know. I feel like you could have gotten him shot in a more organic way. But then later we get Robert Redford's whatever. I'm fine if you want to have a magic bat. Okay, cool. But like, to literally hit the cover off of a baseball on command, like, okay, to make the lights explode into fireworks, like, that's not how lights in baseball stadiums work. It really isn't. Like, if you knock out a light, the light bulb goes out and that's it. It does not set off a chain reaction where everything's exploding, and like, that's not how lights work. And then also, like, the explanation of, like, why Robert Redford's character can't play baseball. They say, like, the doctor just comes in and says, your stomach lining is deteriorating, and if you play baseball, it will kill you. And I'm like, specifically baseball? Like, he doesn't say, hey, avoid picking up heavy things, or maybe don't go for a jog, or don't play football. Like, he specifically says, like, if you play football, or if you play baseball, it will kill you. It just, I don't know. And because the stomach lining's deteriorating, I don't know. It just, a lot of the plot, a lot of the writing required this suspension of disbelief that was just, it was a little too much for me. And it was, I'm willing to suspend disbelief for a lot of movies, but for that, it was a little too much. It was so much, it was distracting. Like, it was almost distracting that I was sitting there going, like, really? This can't happen. Now, this sounds like I really don't like the movie, but I actually do like
it. Okay, that's what I was about to say. You're making me rethink things big time right now.
No. I actually do like the movie. It's literally just some aspects of the writing where I'm like, what? Okay. But regardless, like, it is so well shot. Like, it is a beautiful movie to look at. The art direction, the cinematography is fantastic. The lights exploding at the end. Yeah, it's kind of dumb that it happens, but man, does it look good. I mean, it makes for some incredible visuals as he's running around. That's an iconic scene. And for good reason, not just because of where it happens in the movie or why it happens, but because it looks fantastic. It's very, the film, it's very warm. It's just, it's really well shot. It's a beautiful movie to look at from start to finish. The performances are really good. Robert Redford is extremely handsome and is very good. Oh yeah, he's like peak handsome Robert Redford. Glenn Close is great. She's great in everything all the time. Mm-hmm. You get a young Michael Madsen, which is neat to see. He just kind of plays Michael Madsen, but regardless, it's cool. And Wilford Brimley is really good at playing this grizzled old school manager. Darren McGavin, the dad from A Christmas Story, is a good villain. Robert Duvall's just kind of there. I mean, he's good, but he's just kind of there. It's kind of funny. Throughout the whole movie, Robert Duvall's character is just like, hey, I'm important, and let me tell you how important I am. Just like, but
he stole that. He stole really that from Wilford Brimley's book.
Yeah, but he does a really good job. Every character in the film is cool, is pretty well written, really well performed. It looks really nice. It's just the only thing. Literally, my only problem with it is there are just some parts of the story where I'm like, what? Like, I don't. And if it was just serial killer, or if it was just the magic bat, or just the medical explanation, I'd be like, eh, whatever, fine, you know, suspension of disbelief, whatever. But like, just so, it just felt like it was piling on, and so that was just a little bit much for me. But otherwise, it's a cool movie. It is fun to watch if you can get past that. And I know some people are gonna hear me say this and be like, ugh, you're overanalyzing this, like, so lame. Why can't you just watch a movie and like it and just enjoy it? And I get that. Maybe that's just me, but there are definitely some things to really, really like about the movie. So it's not a bad movie. I don't want anyone to think I hate it. There's just some parts of it that left me kind of going, what? But it's nice. It's a good movie. And I understand why people have it so high. I get it.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like what you said, though, because it made me think. I never really thought about the serial killer aspect of it. The medical part made me laugh once you started breaking it down, because I just kind of played it off as whatever, because, you know,
yeah, after, like, yeah,
because I think after I think I saw it probably after Kurt Gibson's home run in 88. So like there's a lot of similarities there. You know, Kurt Gibson's not supposed to hit.
Yeah, yeah,
and he comes up and hits a bomb and you're like, you can picture the lights exploding and everything.
Oh, yeah. Just, yeah, exactly.
Just one of those things as you watch it as a kid. I haven't rewatched it as an adult probably in probably been over 10 years since I've seen The Natural. I just remember watching it when I was younger and how much I enjoyed it. I bet you if I watched it now, I'd probably see a lot. I'm probably going to rewatch all of these now because you're bringing up very, very good points.
I would recommend. Yeah, I had to, a lot of the movies that I had seen before, I had to rewatch because I wanted to have it fresh in my mind when I wrote a review of it. And I also didn't want to have it clouded by nostalgia. And some of these movies on my list, they are a little bit clouded by nostalgia just because that's kind of how movies work and it happens. Mm-hmm. It's okay. But I wanted to have a fresh perspective on it when I wrote a review on it. But yeah, I would recommend rewatching it. It's just, there's just some part that just the serial killer thing for me. I'm just like, there's a better way to do that. You know, he gets mugged and he gets shot. There you go. You know, whatever. It feels kind of generic, but you can do that. You don't have to have this whole, if you're going to have the serial killer, address the fact that she's a serial killer. Like, at all, you know, just have a headline in the newspaper, athlete killer caught, something like that. Like, that's, it just feels weird that just, like, no one talks about it. Like, yeah, this, it would be like if we caught Ted Bundy and, like, nobody paid it, like, no one was like, yeah, sure. And, like, that was it. Like, afterwards, nobody remembers him. Nobody ever talks about him. Like, just, I don't know. If that felt a little weird and unnecessarily weird.
It'd be like watching Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and pretending that the ranch never happened. It'd be fun.
Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, Manson. Yeah, that was the thing, like, at the time.
Exactly. No big deal. Nothing to see here. Just a flamethrower in the pool. It's okay.
Right, exactly. Yeah, no big deal.
But no, I'm going to check that out. Good movie. Very good movie. I enjoyed it quite a bit a while back. Again, a lot of this is nostalgia here. And number 13 is definitely one because I watched it as a kid. And as a kid, my nerding for baseball started very young. Like, I used to take score books to the games and keep score all nine innings when kids were playing with peanuts and doing goofy things. I was like into baseball from the get-go. And that's how I was. So I always envisioned myself, you know, managing teams. Like if we were playing cut ball after a Little League game, another game's going on, I was the one ramrodding things. I wanted to be the manager of the situation. So my number 13 is a little bit.
Did you keep score at games?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I brought my own scorebook and everything. Oh, yeah, it was hardcore.
You brought your own scorebook. Now that's hardcore. That's next. That's Galaxy Brain level baseball nerd. I just did the scorebook that was in the program.
You want to know how bad it was? Because I would keep score for our Little League teams instead of the coaches doing it. So I would take those books home and I would keep score of games on TV.
Ah, that's cool. Yeah. I used to keep score so my dad used to coach my brother in Little League and I used to be the scorekeeper for the team. Mm-hmm. And I actually went so far as to keep running Excel spreadsheet stat books.
Stats.
Of these like 8-year olds. Like this guy's hitting 720.
I would do that. We'd have our pizza party at the end of the year. I'm like, yeah, this guy hit 278. This one, because the old books, they had the logs. So you didn't need a calculator. You could just go see it in the back. It was the best. My first paid job was actually being a Little League scorekeeper. They paid us $7 a game, plus you got a piece of pizza and a small soda to keep score in the score booth. It was awesome.
Man, you got paid? That's sick. What's funny is I feel like keeping score is a lost art.
It is.
Like my 9-year-old plays baseball, and last season they needed somebody to keep score, and it was always the coach's dad who always would keep score. This, you know, older guy looked like he was like in his 60s. He was always going to keep score. And then one game he was gone and the coach was like, anybody know how to keep score? And like every single parent was like looking around, like, I don't know. And I was like, I'll do it. I can keep score. It's fine. And I was the go-to scorekeeper after that. After if ever the coach's dad wasn't there, it was like, hey, Ben, can you keep score? Because I was apparently the only parent who knew how to keep score for baseball.
That's funny.
It's just, I'm so sad. It's so fun. I love keeping score, and I need to do it next time I go to a baseball game. I always end up not doing it for some dumb reason.
Yeah, I was just laughing about that with some guys the other day. I'm like, I don't remember the last time I kept scoring a game because, you know, now I go with a bunch of buddies or, you know, couples or something. It's just not the same anymore. But I might have to.
Right. Well, and you have to pay attention too. You have to pay mm-hmm. close attention to be able to keep score. You can't be distracted for an inning or whatever. Yep. You know, you can't be asking around, hey, what happened? You know, because then it gets all messed up. So that means you have to like. You have to be with people who really want to sit and watch the game, not exactly. like a group of friends who want to chat and drink beers.
Yep, and that's the problem. Therein lies the problem. All right, so my number 13, Little Big League. It is not another one that's playing on everybody's list, but I absolutely love the idea of a kid managing a baseball team. And that's where I was going with all the scorekeeping and everything. He walks in there. One of the best scenes that in the movie that I love is when obviously the kid's grandpa is the owner of the Twins. And the grandpa dies, so the kid inherits it. The team's losing. The manager doesn't want to work for a kid, so the kid says, fine, basically, and he'll manage the team. But before he gets the gig, the assistant coach basically gives him a quiz on, you know, what are you going to do in the bottom of the eighth? So gives him this whole rundown. He tells him who's in the bullpen, who's this, who's that. He runs every scenario through the book. And it's like, I don't think Buck Showalter could have answered this question. That's how bad it was. He doesn't know how to use a bullpen. It was absolutely amazing what this
man,
kid
taking
do.
Shots. Taking shots at Buck.
Well, he can't.
Cut
he can't,
to, you
can't.
Know, the man doesn't even have a job right now.
You can't forgive the. You can't forgive that playoff game.
Me, look, I am sad that he neglected to bring in his closer in what was one of the, if not the most crucial moment of an entire season. But and instead brought in Ubaldo Jimenez of all people. I mean, he could have closed his eyes and pointed at someone in the crowd. And the thing was, he was in Toronto. He would have likely gotten a fan of the Blue Jays and still probably would have been better off than putting Ubaldo Jimenez out there. It's sad, though. You know, it's sad. I love Ubaldo. I really do. Like,
what could have been?
Oh, man. And it's all because of his delivery. His mm-hmm. delivery was so inconsistent, but he was so – I remember the year after he was – one of the years he was really, really terrible for the Orioles. I went to Orioles Fan Fest the next year, and the whole time they used to do these fan forums where they would have the players get on stage and fans would ask questions and stuff. And the whole time, man, Ubaldo was like apologizing to the fans.
Oh, no.
He clearly felt terrible. That he was so bad, and he just was like, I'm really working on it. I really want to be better. I really want to do better. And he just, he clearly was like really affected by it. And I felt so bad for him. I was rooting so hard for him because he was just, he really cared. Like he really, really cared that he was not pitching well. And you could tell it was really affecting him. It's sort of like the same way I feel about Chris Davis. Like you can tell this, like, Davis being bad, really. There's that Sports Illustrated profile. I don't know if you read where they were like talking about how Davis was like in tears, sobbing at his kitchen table because he was playing so poorly, and he's thinking like, I should just retire and just quit, and just like, I feel for the guy, and I felt the same way for Baldo. I'm like, man, I really want you to be better because I know this is really like bumming you out. Mm-hmm. So, yes. Anyways, I don't even know. Oh, I was. No. You were bad mouthing Buck Showalter. That's Showalter. What happened.
I had to because the kid on Little Big League knew the answer to all these questions. Yeah. It was amazing, but then the kid's mom starts dating the first baseman, and that's a whole other thing. It's probably not the best overall film, but the storyline I absolutely loved as a kid watching another kid get to run a baseball team. When this movie was made, I was like 11 years old. So I know I'm a little older than you, but I felt I could relate to this kid going, oh, man, and if, you know, Roger Craig was done managing the Giants and they didn't sign Dusty Baker, I could do it. Will Clark, Matt Williams, Kevin Mitchell, I got this. I had it all planned out, but I really enjoyed Little Big League. It's not like the greatest, you know, overall cinematic beauty, but I think just the storyline is so much fun. I like it more than the Angels in the Outfield, and it's just one of those movies. You don't see movies like this anymore. Where kids can just, you know, kind of have that advantage. The adults still always kind of, you know, are always in charge of the kids for the most part on things we watch. But for this, the kid got to take charge and going through the locker room and, you know, trying to be the adult in the room with a bunch of, you know, rich players that didn't want to listen to him. I found it very entertaining.
Yeah, I actually have never seen it. It's on my list of movies I need to see at some point. But you know what's funny is I was just looking this up. The guy who directed Little Big League, he has never directed another movie.
Oh, that's a bad sign.
He directed Little Big. No, he's written some movies, and he's primarily a producer, it seems. He was actually a producer of Seinfeld for a couple years, and he produced When Harry Met Sally, Princess Bride, Stand By Me.
Pretty good list.
Wow. Yeah, that's a pretty solid list. Though his filmography as a screenwriter is not great. The Kangaroo Jack sequel. Not great. I didn't even know they did a sequel to Kangaroo Jack.
I don't think they wanted any of us to know that.
It was direct to video. Who looked at Kangaroo Jack and was like, you know what that movie needs? Another one.
Oh man, that's outstanding.
Oh god. Anyways, yeah. So yes, Little Big League.
Yeah, and there's cameos from pros like the Griffey's in this. It hits a bomb. It's fun. It's fun. It's worth checking out. But what's your number 12?
Number 12 on my list is 8 Men Out. Similar to Little Big, not even a little,
not even close.
Great pivot. Yeah. So 8 Men Out. If you don't know what 8 Men Out is, it's the story of the Chicago Black Sox scandal. I think just about every baseball fan knows about the Black Sox, especially thanks to Field of Dreams. But the story is really, really interesting. And it really drives the entire movie. It's got the cast is ridiculous. I mean, the cat that's kind of the first thing you notice in 8 Men Out. The cast is absurd. Like, you've got John Cusack, you got Charlie Sheen, you got Michael Rooker, you got D.B. Sweeney, you got Christopher Lloyd, John Mahoney, Bill Irwin. Just a lot of great actors, and every single one of them does a really, really good job. I think, like I said, most of what makes this movie good is the story, just because it's a crazy, really interesting story, especially the story of Shoeless Joe Jackson. I kind of wish there was a little bit of potential that was wasted with the movie, because I really would have liked to have seen more emotion from the film. It feels kind of like a living Wikipedia page, which sometimes happens with biopics. You know, it's like this happened, this happened, this happened. Again, thankfully, it's a fascinating story, so even a living Wikipedia page film is still really good and still really interesting. But I would have loved to have kind of seen a little more. You'd have to take a little bit of creative license with it, but to see kind of a deeper look into the internal conflict that some of the players had, especially Shoeless Joe and Buck Weaver, with their decision whether or not to throw the World Series. They kind of dive a little bit into Buck Weaver, but it's not a whole lot. It's just kind of like I said, it's a sequence of events. The story is really, really interesting. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more from it, but overall, the cast is fantastic. They all do a really, really good job. It's well done. I liked seeing the way they designed, you know, the costumes and everything of the old school baseball uniforms. It's a good movie. Absolutely worth watching. I would have liked to have seen them take a little bit more creative license with it and kind of drive it a little bit more with characters. But overall, it's a good movie. It's enjoyable.
Yeah, I absolutely love 8 Men Out. I have it higher up on my list. I'm a big, big fan of the movie. Just the story of the Black Sox scandal is a great story. They portray that pretty darn well. You mentioned the cast. I couldn't imagine getting a cast like that now to do a movie like this. That's an outstanding cast. Yeah. It's ridiculous what they, especially for a baseball movie. Because if you think about it, most baseball movies we watch, it's like, okay, Costner's in it, and then a bunch of kind of younger guys. Like, this had a full
it's Kevin
cast.
Costner and whoever he can recruit. Yeah,
exactly. Like, this is like the only other movie off the top of my head that I can think of that cast like this is like Young Guns. Young Guns has like a loaded cast of like talented younger people, but I could be wrong. There's probably others too, but similar situation
Sure, but
absolutely love it. You make a great point. I wish we got to, because you could see the kind of trials and tribulation with Shoeless Joe and them, but we don't get to see enough. Like, you see some of them coming out of hotel rooms with, like, you know, money getting dropped off and this, that, and the other, but you don't really get to see the strife of it all. Like you're saying, you don't get to see them maybe, you know, talking to each other about it. Cause it wasn't just like, you know, it was an easy decision. Probably like, oh yeah, sure. No, there was probably some back and
forth.
Right.
Guys, exactly.
More than we saw.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think the cast was so good. I mean, those are
some really good
actors.
They could have done some great scenes.
Right. They could have, like, they had the capability to really show internal conflict. And honestly, you wouldn't have even needed to add all that much to the film. You could have just kind of added a few scenes here and there that just show how painful of a decision this was, especially for guys like Shoeless Joe and Buck Weaver, especially because they were a little bit more morally conflicted, I think, than others. So I would have liked to have seen that. But yeah, overall, it's a solid movie with a fantastic cast.
Yeah, for baseball fans, like, a lot of my movies, if you're a baseball fan, you probably don't need to see them because they're more just like goofy movies. This is one, as a baseball fan, like, I highly recommend watching. It's a very, very good movie just for the history of baseball and the overall acting of it. It's great. And like, man, you got me thinking about it now. It'd be great. Like, they could have just done a simple, like, post-game locker room, like, guys getting dressed and talking about stuff. And, you know, there's Joe sitting in his locker,
right,
kind of depressed, thinking about it. Like, so simple. Like, so, like, little
yeah,
things like
you could
that.
You could have added stuff in. Yeah, exactly. And it just to give a little emotional aspect to it, because, you know, even if it didn't literally happen, we don't have documentation of it necessarily happening, you know, it happened in some form or another. You know that this was painful for those guys and a difficult decision. So, yeah, I would have liked to have seen them show that a little bit. But that's honestly, that's kind of a minor, like, you know, it's kind of the end of the movie. I'm like, ah, bummer. Like, that would have been cool. But overall.
Yeah, very, very much. So my number 12, I told you guys at the beginning of this that this was like a childhood reenactment part of my list. And if I liked Little Big League because the kid got to be the manager, I like Rookie of the Year more because he got to be the starting pitcher. So good old Henry Rowan Gardner, just, you know, in the outfield, you know, you see Falls, you know, playing on a, I can't remember what he fell on now, but messed up his shoulder. And now he's just got this cannon. And of course, he's in Wrigley where you throw the home run back and he throws a seed to home plate. And somehow they allow him to call the guy out, which is pretty entertaining to me because so far-fetched from the truth. But that part's funny. And then just to go through and, you know, strike out all these guys, I thought the acting was great. Like, Gary Busey was just very, very funny in the movie. And then some of the other coaches and whatnot in that locker room. It was not really the best of baseball playing films. Like, Eight Men Out, they played great baseball on the field, stuff along those lines. But just the kind of goofiness, you know, the kids are in the – his best buddies are always in the stands rooting him on. And then when he loses his ability to throw gas, he goes back old school and throws the Ephus pitch to strike a guy out in the playoffs where, you know, Wrigley and the Cubs can't win a World Series and the horse Henry takes him back to the promised land. All that great stuff. It is one of the better kids movies out there. And I think if you're a kid and you like baseball, you saw Rookie of the Year. So I'm a big Rookie of the Year fan.
You know, it's funny. It's another, a lot of these more kids oriented movies I haven't seen. Rookie of the
Year. Shows our,
is another
it
one.
Shows our person. It shows our brain differences. You're so much more intellectual than me.
Oh no, I wouldn't say that. but Rookie of the Year is definitely one I've heard of. And I know, yeah, Busey's in it. John Candy's in it too.
You get
what's his name, the janitor from Scrubs, I forget the guy's name, he pops up in it, but yeah, I haven't actually seen the movie. I need to check it out. It seems like a fun kids movie.
It's gonna be fun through these podcasts going through baseball movies. I'm gonna watch all these really smart documentaries that I'm gonna love now that I'm older. And you're going to go back with these kids' movies that I recommend you watch with your kids so you don't feel so bad sitting through it all.
Yeah, I should watch some of these, honestly, with my kids. I think they would enjoy them.
I think they
enjoy
them.
We've been kind of going through classic Disney movies because they haven't really seen many of the classic Disney films because they're kind of not out. Now they are on Disney Plus, but before Disney Plus, the Disney, you know, if you wanted to go watch The Little Mermaid, you had to own it. Like, you had to buy it. And that was it. Like, it wasn't streaming anywhere. So now that we have Disney Plus, we're kind of going through all these. We watched Cinderella earlier tonight, which I haven't seen in a billion years. But yeah, once we kind of go through those, I think we should definitely start watching some of these kids' baseball movies.
Yeah, I'd love to hear back on how they take it, because I, like I said, I watched most of these as a kid. I probably would not feel the same way about them now, but it's just kind of that part of me remembering them as a kid, how much I enjoyed them, and I'll always kind of cherish them in that respect as baseball movies. I said my number 11 is The Rookie. We talked about The Rookie already. So as we wrap up this list tonight, who is your number 11? Yeah.
My number 11 is another documentary. It's called Ball Player Pelotero. It's a really, really interesting documentary. If you haven't heard about it, it's okay. I mean, it makes a lot of lists of like good baseball movies, but it's not, for whatever reason, just kind of never got a ton of publicity. It's a really cool documentary on how the MLB recruits players in the Dominican Republic for the international signing period in July. And it's a fascinating kind of dive into the topic. It specifically kind of dives into how the MLB tries to take advantage of these kids who are very poor, come from poor families, but are really talented at baseball and are kind of counting on baseball being their ticket out of poverty. Because, I mean, you know, these guys who sign these international deals, these are like 16, 17-year-old kids who are signing, you know, $5 million bonuses just to sign with major leagues. I mean, that's huge. If you grow up in poverty in the Dominican Republic, that is massive. A guy like Jason Dominguez this past year, you know, someone like that. So it really looks at that, and it does not provide a particularly positive perspective on Major League Baseball. That was quite some alliteration right there.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it was totally accidental. It does not, MLB is not representative very positively in this film at all, which I think is kind of important to notice, because they are kind of taking advantage of these teenagers. It takes a really, really critical stance in the MLB, and almost kind of like, it kind of plays out the recruiting process as this almost form of like indentured slavery or something like that, where it's just like, this is their only shot, and they got to work for the team or else their lives are kind of ruined. And it specifically looks at Giancarlo Bautista and Miguel Sano as two prospects who at the time were hot international prospects. Bautista's story is very heartwarming. He lost his dad at the age of 10, and his coach kind of becomes a surrogate father for him, which is really sweet. Bautista's not this incredible talent like Sano was at the time, but he's a solid player. His story is interesting, and it's very sweet. Later on, I don't think Bautista really became much of anything in the major leagues. But Sano, we all know, obviously. Mm-hmm. And he was, I didn't realize the story like that was going on with him, especially the controversy over whether or not he really was the age that he said he was. And they kind of dive into that. And specifically, they kind of dive into how Sano had to jump through all of these hoops over and over and over again to prove that he really was the age he said he was. And that was a lot of teams tried to use that on him as a bargaining chip to kind of show like, hey, you know, you got this whole controversy going on. Look, we're going to pay you this. It's a little less than probably what you were expecting, but you know, you're not going to be able to get this huge bonus you wanted because of this crazy controversy. Specifically, the Pittsburgh Pirates really tried to do that with Sano, and they have cameras that show like what the Pirates recruiters were saying to him. And yeah, I won't spoil it, but it is not a good look for the Pirates at all. They really tried to lowball him, and they really tried to play him bad. So it's a bummer that this is how the MLB system works, but I think Pelotero is a good film to watch because it's important to be aware of how this system works. I don't personally know how we can make the system better. You know, it's not something I've really thought too hard about. And obviously we've gotten some fantastic players from the international system, but it's interesting to look at how some players get left out. Some of these talented 16, 17 year olds kind of get left by the wayside because they're just not good enough, and what kind of effect that has on them. Batista is a great example of that. So it's an interesting topic. I knew very little about, virtually nothing about, honestly. I just knew that players from the Dominican Republic signed in July, and that was pretty much it. So kind of diving into the recruitment process and how that works, it's interesting. There's one scout in the film who talks about Sano, and the quote is, he says, at the end of the day, he's merchandise.
Wow.
So yeah, exactly. And that kind of gives you an idea of how this film portrays MLB. It's not a great look, but it's an interesting topic to look into.
Yeah, I've never heard of this one, but it sounds very, very interesting. I knew it wasn't the most up and up quality system that went on down there. I was aware of that, but not to this level, and I did not know they did a documentary on it. That's really interesting to see. I'm wondering if, you know, since in recent years, I know they have academies down there. All the teams have, like, you know, kind of fields and situations for different players. So it seems like it's better. Maybe this documentary helped take it in that direction.
Yeah, it's worth mentioning that this film came out in 2012. So It is entirely possible that this system has changed a lot in 8 years. I honestly don't know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, maybe it helped push the change or something along those lines.
Yeah.
I'd be real interested to see how that goes. I'd like to, I wonder if, you know, maybe one day they can make another one of how it goes nowadays. I'd imagine there's still some problems in certain countries because you can't have amazing facilities everywhere. We're getting players besides just the Dominican. We got Venezuela and all over the place. So you'd imagine it's still pretty rough in certain aspects. So that's an interesting documentary. I have not even seen that one before.
If you think about it, it's kind of inevitable that the MLB would do something like this, because you have these kids sign at 16, 17 years old. Baseball is all they know. They know they can basically lift them and their families out of poverty with one bonus. I mean, $5 million to a 16 or 17 year old kid growing up in poverty in the Dominican Republic. That's insane. And regardless of how the rest of their career goes, that bonus alone can kind of lift their family out of poverty. It's kind of inevitable that a gigantic corporation like the MLB would view these kids as merchandise and kind of try and take advantage of that. And
well,
it's kind of what you see now. Exactly.
It's what you see now with these kids getting their extensions. Like, we, you know, the Albies and the Acuñas and the Lewis Roberts, like, they're great extensions, but everyone says they deserve more money. But for them, that's such life-changing money. It's like, it's hard to say no to.
Yeah, exactly. So it's an interesting, it's not the happiest of documentaries. It's not a total bummer, but it's an interesting one and a topic it's important to be aware of. If you want to watch it, it is available on Hoopla, which, if you don't know what Hoopla is, there are two apps that are incredible. Hoopla and Canopy with a K. Both of those apps are free streaming movies available through your library. All you have to do is enter your library card number. Some libraries only do Hoopla, some libraries only do Canopy, so that's why there's two of them. You just enter your library card number, create an account with that library card number through the app, and you have access to, I think it's about 10 movies a month that you can stream. And they have some really good movies. Pelotero's on Hoopla. Canopy has essentially every movie that A24 has put out. So, like, Lady Bird, Midsummer, movies like that. They're just available for free. If you have a library card, they're free. They're there. And Canopy also has a lot of a decent bit of the Criterion collection. Ever since Criterion put out their own streaming service, they've lost some of that, but there's a decent bit of old, harder to find kind of art house films on Canopy too. So if you want to watch Pelotero, it's on Hoopla. It's also on, I guess, Sports Illustrated has their own film streaming service. I'm not sure. I'm using a website that everybody should use. I love it. It's called Just Watch. JustWatch.com. JustWatch is a film streaming search engine. It's the best thing ever. If you have a movie and you're like, you know what? I really want to watch this movie. Is it streaming anywhere? Search the movie. Boom. Pops up on JustWatch. And it tells you where it's streaming, if it's streaming. You know, is it on Netflix? Is it on Stars, HBO? As far as obscure as Hoopla and apparently Sports Illustrated, who has a movie streaming service, I did not know. So it's on there, which is what I do on there. I love it. Just Watch is great. They have an app. They have the website. It's fantastic. So if you've never heard of Just Watch, use it, use it, use it. It's super, super useful because the thing that always happens to me when I'm trying to figure out what movie to watch is I'm scanning Netflix forever and ever and ever and ever, and I spend 30 minutes scanning Netflix, and I say, screw it, I'll just watch Parks and Rec. And I watch Parks and Rec.
That's not a bad alternative.
No, not a bad alternative at all. But that happens for my brother. It's, you know what, I'll just rewatch The Office for the 8th time. People do that because it's just there's so much content out there that it's hard to sit there and be like, what movie do I want to watch? Well, let me look through everything that HBO's got and everything that Stars has, and I'll look through everything that Showtime has and also everything that Netflix has, and then I'll pick a movie. You can't do that. So you create a watch list on Just Watch. You can filter your watch list by streaming service. So you say, oh, I've only got Netflix, I've got Hulu, and I've got HBO Go. So I'll filter by that. And then on your watch list, you're like, oh, cool, this one's on Netflix now. I'll do that. It's so useful. I sound like I'm an employee for Just Watch, but I'm really not. They are not a sponsor, nor do I work for them. They are just so useful, and I use it all of the time. I create a whole watch list of movies that I want to see at some point. And then when I decide I want to watch a movie, I open up my watch list. You can sort it by random, and I just pick the first movie that pops up. Takes awesome. All the decision-making out of it. It's amazing. Use it. And if you want to watch Pelotero, it's on Hoopla, so check it out.
That's outstanding. I have to go check that out. I didn't even know it existed. So that's pretty cool
exactly.
stuff.
It's great.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. So that's awesome to hear, and this was fun. First of a few of these we're going to do here. Going through baseball movies, and the beauty of it is it helped just talk about baseball. We just started going down rabbit holes all over the place. So it was a ton of fun.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, it's a lot of fun. I watch a lot of movies every year, and I love talking about movies. I love watching movies. So I'm always down to talk movies, and especially baseball. It's like my two favorite things colliding, baseball and movies. We haven't even got – I mean, a podcast on my top five is probably going to take forever. Because
I think I already decided that we're going to do like five separate podcasts for the top five. So we're going to stretch them out. Because I think you and I both, when we get to the big boys, we're going to want to talk quite a bit. So I think there's a lot to
like exactly.
There. But all
for
right.
Sure. And we'll have to talk. Yeah. We'll have to talk a little bit about the bad ones too. I know talked about a little bit on the last podcast about how much I dislike Trouble with the Curve, but.
Yes.
We can always recap
that. That was so good. People love that part of it. We will definitely recap stuff. We will have many, many more of these to go. But everybody, check out Ben on Twitter at Ben J. Palmer. I'm at BD Intrick, and Ben's work over at PitcherList.com. We'll come back with another episode next week doing our 6 through 10 and see what rabbit holes we can go down then. But for now, Ben for the Bubba, episode 261 in the books. Thanks again, Ben.
Thank you.
Better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.